Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Over the last year, we've had a number of programs here about urban agriculture, about the promise of it in America, about what people are doing in Baltimore at the grassroots level to make it happen. And over and over and over again, you hear the name of Will Allen. Will Allen, who used to be an All-American high school basketball player, who played professional basketball for a while, was a star at the University of Miami. He was drafted by what is now the Washington Wizards. He played for the American Basketball Association, then became a salesman that we'll talk about in a bit. But his passion has been in the dirt. And what he's doing is transforming the idea that we can be sustainable and self-sufficient in America. He joins us out of character because he's on the phone rather than having his hands in the dirt, but joins us from Milwaukee where he's based. Will Allen, welcome. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here, Mark.
And I do wish we could do this outside because I know you'd be much more relaxed if we were outside.
That's true.
And rather than both of us stuck inside during this conversation. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Now, well, I did say that you're like, in many ways, I think you really are, if not the founder of the spiritual head of this notion of urban agriculture. But I want people to understand a bit about who you are before we jump into that. I mean, I've met many people who have known and met you. They're just so taken with you when they see you with young people with your hands in the dirt creating worm beds. But your passion for this came from maybe in some sense your roots, but you took a circuitous route to get there. You started out life as a son of a farmers, but grew up in Montgomery County, right?
Yeah, my father was actually a sharecropper from South Carolina, from Aiken, South Carolina, that moved to the Washington, D.C. area with some of his sisters and brothers back in the 30s. For a better life. Of course, many African Americans in the 30s moved to northern cities out of the South that was segregated and so forth for a better life, better job. But along with that, he brought these wonderful skills that everybody is hot to learn about today, of how to grow food. And fortunate for myself and my brothers, he wanted us to learn how to grow our own food. So our summers were spent on a small farm right on Montrose Road, right on the border of Rockville and Bethesda. So that's where I really learned to do a lot of what I do today. But it was really a deeper piece in terms of how my family back in those days in the 50s and 60s when I was growing up, how my mother would take the food that we grew and share it with folks. And in large part, that's what we do today, is to grow lots and lots of food and distribute it in many different ways throughout the state of Wisconsin and into Chicago, where we have four of our eight farms that we operate as an organization now.
I want to come to that and just everything you believe and work in. I'm glad this is the day you're on. The other day we had a conversation about this last week with people in Baltimore who had you down here, who are really pushing the idea of urban agriculture and also the change the nature of our school system. With that as well.
Right.
But some people called in to go that this is kind of a white person's imposition on the world of the inner city. And then I retorted, well, most folks I know in it are people of color. And the man we're talking to is Will Allen, who clearly is a man of color, a black man in America. Could you talk about that? Because there's a real a fear and divide around this.
Well, the movement really started, back in the 60s when hippies went out into the rural areas and started doing organic farming and so forth. When we talk about the good food that everybody wants today, the organic or the naturally produced food, but folks were producing that food many, many years ago. and slavery and so forth. But you know, I think part of the issue has always been that many people of color left that growing food for a better life because it was under duress, growing good food under duress of slavery and, like my father, sharecropping. So to get and then many of our immigrants, our Latino farm workers who work for bad wages, and many of the immigrants that lost their lands in their native countries. So many people of color over the years, as we've marched through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s, and got into 2000, I think many people thought that this was work that they didn't want to do. But I've been very pleased lately. Maybe it's because I'm one of the leaders, a person of color that they see. But I'm starting to see more people of color coming on board. I don't hear so much. 10 years ago, when I was working in communities, people would say, "Oh, that's slave's work. I don't want to do it."
Mm-hmm.
But I don't hear that anymore. And I, as I travel around the country and I travel around the world, I'm seeing more people of color coming on board. I see many people of youth, youth that are coming on board. So I've seen this transformation happen, and it's happened very quickly. And of course, with the White House, Michelle Obama's White House garden, you know, that has helped a lot in terms of a lot of mainstream folks wanting to join what I call now not the good food movement, but I think it's the good food revolution. I've kind of named it the good food revolution because now you have top-down operators such as school boards and such as politicos and corporate companies who have green initiatives. They all want to join the good food revolution. So it's a good thing. It's a mainstream thing. But again, I say I'm very pleased that people of color, I had never gotten interviewed by a black radio station or magazine until this year, after I won the MacArthur in 07 and getting some notoriety. And now I'm being interviewed by many people of color magazines and so forth, and radio stations. And so that's really pleased me. And I think we need to do this in a multicultural way. We have the most unhealthy food system than at any other time in our history. I mean, we got more people that are hungry. We got more people that have disease from eating poorly. Obesity rates are ridiculous. We can't go on like this forever. And I think people are starting to realize that. And this is a great opportunity. And the economy, having this poor economy, has led a lot of people to realize that they have to start growing some of their own food. And the fact that Baltimore school system, I was so impressed with Tony and the group at the Baltimore school system, have taken this extraordinary step of wanting all of their food to come from the state of Maryland,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, that's taken some real leadership, and hopefully other states will follow, because we have to develop local food systems where farmers are, have a way of making income. We can keep money in the local economy so it circulates, instead of you know big companies from California and so forth. That money goes back to those states and so forth, and it's only a few states. So we need to develop this local food system and start growing food everywhere, not just in the suburbs, but inside cities. There's opportunity to grow food. We're growing food on asphalt, concrete, rooftops, inside buildings. We have aquaponic systems raising fish inside buildings. We can put up greenhouses up. We can have school gardens, any space. Nothing's off limits for growing food. And we need this combination of urban, suburban, and rural. We need to protect our rural farmers, small farmers that have been the backbone of this country. We can't forget about them. We need to make those urban-rural connections where we need to open up these markets in the city for those rural farmers to be able to come in and say we need to develop those relationships so those farmers aren't afraid to come into our inner cities and with their goods.
We're talking to Will Allen, and while we're talking to him, I'm going to go through this next 40 minutes or so and kind of parse out many of the things that Will Allen was just describing. If you're near your computer, let me encourage you to go to Growing Power, Inc. That's growingpower.org, I mean to say. Growingpower.org. You can see what we're talking about. This is Will Allen's website. It's the organization he founded. It's the idea of growing food in our cities to feed ourselves, to change the way we live in America, which many of us are realizing we have to do very quickly. You can join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, to join in on this conversation with Will Allen and me about urban agriculture and where it's going and where America might go. And, Will, I was going to kind of digress a bit into you, but let me wait for that for a minute. I want to grab a hold of something you said a minute ago to kind of really spur this on in terms of what America, how America has to transform itself. I mean, the very idea that we can actually, that you believe that we can actually turn our cities and parts of our cities into farms that feed the people of those communities is not just pie in the sky, but is very realistic. I mean, that and put people to work doing it, especially in light of the fact that so many farmers have fled the land because they can't make a living. So talk about that vision of what this next century can bring.
Yeah, I believe that we can create thousands of jobs. There's so many different job possibilities. Of course, we're going to need renewable energy to be able to do this, to be able to grow food year-round. We're proving that we can do that in one of our more challenging places in Milwaukee where it gets, it's not like Maryland.
Right.
We get 50-degree wind chills and 20 below zero here, and we're able to grow food inside our greenhouses and hoop houses here throughout the winter. So it's possible that we can grow food. We need to grow food more than 25 weeks, good food more than 25 weeks, and the only way to do that is to grow it inside greenhouses. So we need renewable energy to keep the cost down. We also need healthy soil. All of our soil is contaminated, whether we're in rural America, suburban America, or urban America. The soil's contaminated, so we have to grow new soil, and we have all this food residue and waste that we put into a big hole into a landfill that we could put back into the soil. It came from the soil. So we need to do composting, and the food waste that we don't compost, we can turn into energy. We've developed a high-solid anaerobic digester to take solid food waste into a slurry and transform it into acetic acid that eventually winds up by changing the bug's structure to produce methane in a methane digester and get scrubbed clean to generate electricity. So we have those technologies that we've developed. We have to put them to use. I think 2009 is the start of us actually going out and doing stuff instead of talking about it. And we've been doing this for a long time here in Milwaukee, and it's become accepted by our political folks, our senators, our Governor Doyle. All of those folks have visited Growing Power, and they support what we do, and that makes it a lot easier when you start getting looked at as a asset to the city and an asset to the state. Our mayor has put in, had us, Growing Power put in, we have the mayor's garden at City Hall this year for the first time, following the example of Michelle Obama's garden at the White House. So I think we can do that all over the country, and we need these kind of concrete examples of inspiration to get more people doing it. This year, I think more people were growing gardens than at any other time in the history of this country. So we need to build on that. This revolution, unlike what Nikki Giovanni said, that revolution won't be televised, we really need to televise this revolution so we grow it. revolution really needs to be televised and radioized and talked about to really grow it, because we need about to fundamentally change the food system. And people like Michael Pollan have framed it very well. We need about we really need about 50 million new people growing food. And I'm not talking about 50 million farms. I'm talking about 50 million people growing in their backyards, side yards, and their, you know, in containers on their balconies and porches and community gardens and community farms and youth farms. We need that many people, and that's going to take a while.
And but it's almost possible. Like, go ahead, I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off, Will. Finish with you, I'm sorry.
But it's possible that we can do this, and it's going to take some patience, and it's going to take a lot of hard work. But it's going to produce sustainable communities, because I don't know how we can really have sustainable communities without having a healthy food system. Why would people want to do anything if they're hungry? Why would kids? How can kids learn if they're going to school hungry and they're eating some of the food that we feed our kids at our schools today, at our public schools today?
We're talking with Will Allen MacArthur, fellow who founded Growing Power, who is turning Milwaukee and moving to other cities. We're trying it here in Baltimore, which is turning our cities into zones of urban agriculture to feed ourselves and create a new sustainable economy. America has to do something a bit different. What are your thoughts? As we talk to Will Allen, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to my Facebook page, Mark Steiner, and I can see what you're commenting on there. David in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, David, you there? Hi, David.
Yes, hello.
Welcome.
I just want to laud Will on what he's doing. I wanted to also point out that he had mentioned the city schools and their efforts to procure as much as possible from the state. Also, I was just informed that the city is also going to do something which I think is even as much impact as that, which is to one day a week attempt to have a vegetarian day in the school, which is in the same field, but it's another avenue. Keep up the good work, Will.
Thanks. Thank you. That would be great. And I know Tony and his group. Tony's the director of. I'm sure you've had him on your show.
Yes, last week this time he was on the show.
Yeah, and he's done just an amazing job since coming on into the Baltimore school system. And he's probably had a little opposition, but you know that's you know, when you have revolutionary ideas, people chant. But he's it's good to bring in somebody who has great ideas like that and really care about the kids, because I know I met him, and I know he cares about the kids, and he wants the kids to have really good food. And the 33-acre farm is going to be a concrete example of how it can be done.
Right outside of Baltimore, in Catonsville is where the farm is. And he's also going to, what the caller was talking about was Meatless Mondays. They're going to try to start in the school lunches. But when you talk about Meatless Mondays, before we go to the next caller, I think it's important to point out, though, that Will Allen, you're not a food purist.
No.
By any stretch?
By no means.
Right.
By no means. I think it's important to for us to protect those farmers that raise animals, too, because especially the grass-fed folks that are raising animals in a sustainable way and treating animals humanely. I think it's important that we understand that that's healthy. And a lot of our inner cities folks need protein. So it's important that we support those farmers as well that are raising steers and lamb and pork and so forth.
Let me return to the phones here, 410-319-8888. If you talk with Will Allen about how to turn our cities into gardens, change our way of living. He's leading that movement from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're going to talk more about Growing Power and just how they're raising fish and doing all this other kind of work that he alluded to in his earlier statement. 410-319-8888. Rhonda in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Mark.
Hi, Rhonda.
I'm just now tuning in, and I am just amazed. It seems as though the speaker has ticked my mind, because this has actually been an idea of mine to take to the mayor of Baltimore. We have so many lots that are empty that can be changed or turned into cultivated agricultural areas by the community efforts. And I'm just wondering, you know, if there could be something worked out with the city of Baltimore, there could be some maybe tax incentive provided to landowners that they lend that land until such time as it is sold, but the community can actually come together and cultivate the land and grow all types of vegetables and fruits and things like that. And, I mean, all you have to do is just look at what people are eating by looking at what's thrown on the ground. And you'll see that it's nothing. It is nothing. It's non-nutritious. And it's, you know, potato chips and candy bars and things like that. And I think that we can really move towards a greener environment as well as a healthier environment by teaching kids and adults how to eat. And this is just a wonderful way to do it. So I just want to say thanks to the speaker. This has been an idea of mine for the longest time. And even to go, even to use the interstate land, I know there's a lot of just the median strips are just unused land that's not doing anything. I was just wondering if we could even expand that to the federal government and using some of that land.
Well, Rhonda, before you go, I want you to encourage you to write me at marcbsteiner, S-T-E-I-N-E-R, at gmail.com so I can put you in touch with the people in the city, Tony Gerassi and others, who are actually trying to do what you're talking about, because a movement has to be built. So I'll put you in touch with them.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for calling.
All right, bye-bye.
Because, well, Alan, I mean, you write, you, in one of the articles I read about you, you talked about how in Chicago there are, what is it, how many acres or how many empty lots, 77,000?
Yeah, there's about 77,000 vacant lots and about 33 square miles of vacant land in the city of Chicago. And cities of Detroit, of course, there's probably even more vacant land in Flint, Michigan, and many of these former auto industry towns in the industrial Midwest, places like Youngstown, Ohio, where I'll be visiting soon to start the dialogue with the city fathers about urban agriculture and to help get them on board. So it's tremendous. It's great to see somebody like Rhonda, who's very interested in pursuing this idea of taking vacant lots. Now, not every vacant lot is going to wind up being taken out of development, but a large percentage of this land can be used for greening, and it should be used for greening. I think one of the things that we have to make sure that we have long-term tenure of the land, because to resurrect the soil is a pretty expensive venture. You have to grow new soil. You can't grow in the existing soil. The EPA is actually going to be writing guidelines in the future. It's not really responsible to just go in on a vacant lot and start tilling it up and growing food, because you're growing in contamination and you could have people eating contamination. So therefore, we have to grow thousands. One of the big challenges to really expanding urban agriculture, we're going to have to grow thousands and thousands of yards of new soil, of new compost. And that's what we do. This year we'll do 24 million pounds of food residue into compost here in Milwaukee to be able to expand what we're doing and to be able to sell that to support ourselves in this endeavor. So we're going to have to take the waste that's going into the landfill and find composting areas that we can compost this to grow new soil.
When you said 24 million pounds, is that what you said? So now, what percentage of, in Milwaukee, so if you take 24 million pounds of literally trash and turn it into compost.
Yes.
So
that's nitrogen waste, which is food waste, and carbon waste, which is things like wood chip and leaves and straw and hay and cardboard, which is carbon. We use about 75% carbon. There's actually more carbon going into landfills than there is nitrogen.
Uh-huh.
Only about 20 to 25% in each city. is actually a nitrogen waste, but you need that nitrogen waste to really grow really good microbiological compost. So that's what we do. If you're able to grow new soil, and we use worms, we use red worms to help remediate and break down the compost. And that's what we teach at Growing Power in our hands-on trainings that we do at our facility with folks from around the world, or we go out and do outreach trainings like I did at in Baltimore, which was, by the way, very satisfying. It was my first project in the state, coming from the state of Maryland. It was great to for Tony and the group to invite me to do something on the farm there and talk to folks in Baltimore.
That's because you were coming home.
Yeah,
to Baltimore, to Maryland.
It was homecoming.
It's homecoming time. So before we take a break and go back to the phones, I have one quick question. How do you, I mean, when most of the garbage is like picked up and either taken to the dump or even the recyclables are picked up and taken somewhere else, how do you in Milwaukee get your hands on 24 million pounds of that waste to turn into compost? How do you literally get it?
Well, nothing, as far as I'm concerned, no places off limits. We now pick up from corporate companies. There are many corporate companies that have large cafeterias that feed. We have one company, Kohl's Corporation, which has stores in Maryland, but they're based here in Milwaukee. They have 3,900 employees, so they feed over 3,000 people a day. Rockwell Automation, we pick up there. We have a number of programs with them. Their cafeteria feeds over 2,000 people a day. We have a large hospital in downtown, Aurora Healthcare Systems. We pick up from Northwestern Mutual Insurance Company, another company that feeds over 2,000 people a day. We pick up from wholesalers who have the most. Of course, buying in semi-loads, and a lot of times they over-order, and some of the times that stuff never gets out of the cases. So we pick up 20,000-pound loads from just one wholesaler three times a week. We're in a city where there are a lot of breweries, so the brewery grains, spent grains that have been cooked and, squeezed, the liquid squeezed out, residue from that we pick up. So we pick up 30,000 pounds at a time from some of the microbreweries. Miller Brewery, they get rid of two silos of grains a day. So we're talking to them about taking a portion of those. Of course, we can't handle two silos a day. We'd need a number of very large trucks to do that, so we haven't moved along a continuum to be able to handle that, but someday maybe. So there's lots of waste, and all the cardboard, all the wax cardboard that goes into the landfills, all the wood chip. We just had a major storm where we lost a lot of trees, and the city chips every day. So we're a place where they drop off wood chip every day. So there's lots and lots of waste in every city. You just have to build the relationships with those folks that have the waste to be able to get some of the waste. And then we're just scratching the surface when it comes to the amount of waste because, the large waste haulers get most of it.
We're talking with Will Allen. Will Allen is a MacArthur Fellow. He fellowship of about $500,000 because of his work creating urban agriculture. He created Growing Power, which we'll talk about more specifically in Milwaukee. It's now working in Chicago. There is a new way of looking at America and our cities where we can begin to feed ourselves. How do you do it? How do you literally turn those lands into agriculture? How do we build the greenhouses? How do we grow our own fish? What does his vision mean in reality? We're going to come back and talk about that with Will Allen after this very brief break. But first, when we come back, we're going to go right to LaVon, who is holding on to talk to Will Allen. So stay with us, LaVon, and we're going to come right to your call for Will Allen when we return. Stay with us. We'll be back in just about a minute. Well, Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. Will Allen is our guest. He joins us from Milwaukee, where he lives. And he's taking a break from having his hands in the dirt to talk to us about the future of agriculture in our society, about urban agriculture, about turning our inner cities around, about turning our cities around, about a new vision of America. I encourage you to go to Growing Power on the web to see just what he does as we're talking about it. The number here is 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to the Mark Steiner Facebook page and look for your questions as well there. And as I promised, well, let's go right to our callers who have been waiting at 410-319-8888. And LaVon, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Mr. Allen, for all the great work that you're doing. I had a question about the soil. You said that, you know, there's a lot of contamination. How long, on the average, will it take for, you know, some of the soil to be, you know, available to grow proper plants on it? And then how often should you test? And then how easy is it for you to kind of have your own home remedy of testing the soil?
That's interesting.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very good question. It takes about 6 months to a year to grow new soil. And the process or the protocol, you might say, would also be that you need to know a little bit. It's called a phase one, to know the history of the place that you're going to grow food. And a lot of times you can find that historical history at your city somewhere, depending on where they have those records of who owned the property, whether there was a gas station, maybe dry cleaners on that property, if that's the case. Remember, many in a city like Baltimore, where many of the homes were older homes, they used to use lead paint. So a lot of times you'll find lead close to if there is an existing dwelling, it'll be close to where people would scrape the paint and so forth. So to get away from that is what we do is we use 2 feet of new soil, of new compost on top of the existing soil. And that pretty much protects you from the contaminants, because the roots actually just go into the nutrient soil. They don't go down into hard pan clay. So that protects you. But what we don't want to see is people just all of a sudden going out in the yard and start, you know, tilling up the yard and growing stuff, because many plants take up lead into the system of the plant, and their kids will start eating that produce, and all of a sudden they have lead in their systems, especially the young kids. So we have to be careful. And like I said earlier, the EPA is very concerned about that, because I get calls from the EPA all the time that are happy that we follow this protocol, and they want to get more people to follow the protocol of growing new soil and not using the existing soils.
LaVon, thank you so much for that call. There's a number of things I want to ask you before we run out of time this hour, and one I want to give people a sense a little bit about you, though. I mean, you grew up, as we said, here in Montgomery County, and your father had a little plot of land where you as kids all had to work that land.
Yeah.
And I understand you've done the same thing to your own children.
Yeah, my kids grew up on the farm. My son, who's a partner of a major law firm now, that was his only job all the way through, since he was, you know, a very, very young child, all the way through college. And he played basketball in college, and I was a pretty accomplished basketball player, but it was his only job. So I think when he applied to law schools and he wrote about that, a lot of the law schools were impressed by the fact that he had grew up on a farm and worked hard, and I think they all wanted him for that reason, much more than his athletic background and his good grades. And my daughter, my oldest daughter, who runs our Chicago, four farms in Chicago, she's a artist and went to the School of the Art Institute in Chicago and has a master's in art therapy, and came back to farming and using art and farming as she works with the youth in Chicago. It's important to engage our young people, and regardless of what they wind up doing, it's just a great training ground, agriculture, because not every young person that I work with in our different youth programs are going to wind up being farmers, but it's a great life skill building place, working, learning about what hard work is and how to take care of something, how to be responsible, how to get up in the morning, and how to work through adversity and crop failures and recover from that kind of stuff. So it's a really good life lessons you learn from agriculture.
And you, Will Allen, I mean, you ended up playing, being a great basketball player, University of Miami, high school all-star player, went on to play some pro ball afterwards. But it wasn't, you weren't really like passionate about being a pro ball player. That wasn't your soul, or was it?
Yeah, quite frankly, I'm going to tell you the truth. When I left the farm at 18, I said, never again will I do this hard work. I mean, you know, all my friends back in Rockville, all the guys that I played with, and I played with a lot of guys in the D.C. area like Austin Carr and Sid Catlett, and, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, I always looked at, oh, those guys are out having fun. I'm on the farm working during the summer. I had to get my farm work done before I could go out and play basketball, and I thought I was missing something, you know. So I actually got re-energized around farming when I was in Europe, and I started hanging out with some Belgian farmers that kind of took care of the land the way we did and did it naturally. And I felt that something was missing in my life, and it was growing food. When I got back to the States, that's what I wanted to do.
Well, I'm glad, for all our sakes, I'm glad you did it. And I want to kind of go back to the how this makes sense. I mean, how this actually works. I've read some interviews with you or articles when people have written about your work, where you talk about how this makes economic sense, how you actually have a huge amount of food growing from baskets and greenhouses that actually turn a profit.
Yeah, I mean, we're a nonprofit, but we operate more like a for-profit business. On one side of the street, in our call it one side of the street, we have this business plan and business that feeds the other side of the street, which is our social responsible stuff of working with youth and training folks. But you have to be able to fund that piece, and the way we fund it is by growing and selling produce and doing it in a very integrated way. We have a very integrated farm system at Growing Power, where we grow 159 different varieties of vegetables and herbs and edible flowers that we market to everybody, because my fundamental belief and goal is to make sure that everybody has access to the same good, healthy, nutritious food. And to do that, that's a lofty goal, I know, because that's not the case today. But that's what we try to do. So there's mechanisms in our system to be able to do that, whether it's delivering food and having folks be able to pay for that food with their food stamps or their card, or being able to sell it as a market basket, which is a CSA-type program. We can deliver that food into food desert areas where there are no grocery stores, only corner stores and fast food places. Because in every community, one of the things I found years ago is that in every community, there's a social service agency or a school or a daycare center, and those could be drop sites for those bags of food for people to be able to access this good food. So there's no excuse. If anybody says, well, I can't deliver food into these communities, there's no excuse. You have to develop relationships with those other nonprofits that have been operating there for years in schools that are in the area, and be able to drop that food off so people can pick it up and pay for it through normal means or means with food stamps and so forth. So there's always a way to get the same food that you're able to deliver to upscale restaurants, to farmers markets in the suburbs, or whatever. It's the same food. So we're growing the same food for everybody. We're not saying we're going to grow this food, cheap food over here for poor people, and this better food for rich people. I mean, it's not that way at all, and it shouldn't be that way. And anybody who's doing that is not doing the right thing. So you just have to want to do it. I mean, it's not easy, but you have to be committed. And I think we have a lot of committed people that want to develop ways of getting healthy food to folks regardless of their economic situation.
You really do you believe that urban centers, that we could actually feed ourselves in a much more healthful and profitable for the farmers and way in America, and especially in our urban areas? I mean, is this, can people say, look, we our farmland's dwindling, but farmers are having a hard time making it. So how does your vision of the future make it?
Well, I think we have to look at some models, like look at some of the creative models and inspire other farmers to change. One of the things about farmers, it's very difficult. If you've been farming for years, it's really difficult to change your ways. Farmers are the most stubborn people you ever want to meet, even me. So it's really hard for farmers to change. If they've been growing food for generations a certain way, their fathers grew it that way, so that their grandfathers grew it that way. Now they feel that, regardless of whether it's cost-effective, I got to grow it that way. And that doesn't work today. I mean, we have to be much more creative. We have to, the price of oil has changed the whole dynamics of fertilizer. Many conventional farmers started switching back to spreading cow manure again on their fields because the cost of fertilizer last year went up so high because ethanol was, the cost of feed was just, and the cost of fuel and the ethanol thing changed stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's so many factors that will change the dynamics of how farmers make money. So I think growing your own, taking control of your own destiny, and that's what we're trying to get people to understand, is that we have to control the food that we put into our systems. And to do that, you have to grow it. Sometimes you have to grow it yourself, or you have to purchase it from folks in your community that's growing it. So I think that's the way we do it. It's not going to happen overnight. Everybody thinks that this change is going to happen overnight, but it's not. It's going to take some time, and that's why patience is very, very important. But I think one of the key pieces is not always funding, but we do need funding. I think one of the biggest mistakes we made is not taking some of the stimulus dollars and really putting it into agriculture, to small-scale agriculture, and that's what we're still fighting for. But I think this is really being led by passion. People without passion, this is not going to happen. So this is a passion type. This is passion work. And I think we have a lot of passionate people. And one of the other great things that has happened is that all these young people now want to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, these folks that are in their 20s and 30s and 40s, they've joined the revolution. And, you know, it used to be us old-timers, you know. but now it's all these new people. When I just spoke at the NOFA conference, the Northeast Organic Farmers Conference in Amherst, Massachusetts this past weekend, there were 1,600 people at the conference in the middle of the summer. Imagine that. When 5 years ago they said, don't hold a farmers conference in the middle of the summer, nobody would come. There were 1,600 passionate people there wanting to learn about a new, smaller-scale, community-based techniques, from learning how to grow mushrooms to learning how to grow fish and plants in the same systems, aquaponics, to learning how to compost and vermicompost. So there were, it's an exciting time in America around this good food revolution.
You know, and what's interesting, I hear what you were saying, is that we've had conversations on the show. And by the way, folks, you can phones are still open at 410-319-8888 as we talk with the man who is known as the father of urban agriculture and that movement and creating a different world here for America, Will Allen. And we've had conversations here. I remember we had at a Bioneers conference that took place in Baltimore a couple of years ago, and one of the people I put on the panel with me at the Bioneers conference was a young man who works in the inner city with gangs. And in reclaiming his neighborhood, a young man named Dante Wilson, and out on his own after hearing this conversation, he said, that's how we can transform these neighborhoods, by creating a urban agricultural zone that takes people out of gangs and out of unemployment and puts them to work to reclaim our neighborhoods. And this is we have to start thinking, I think, in ways that we're not imagining now if we want to recreate and save America.
Yeah, I totally agree with, I don't know Dante, but I totally agree with him. I've been saying this for a long time, that these are crime-fighting tools. Having young people have jobs during the summertime, because I go into Chicago and talk to some of the toughest teens in America, and these kids don't want to be out on the corner hustling drugs or doing what they do out there on the street. All they want is a job, and some of them got a little felony thing going, and nobody's going to hire them. So I think if we're able to create these jobs and folks that are coming out of prison, this is a way for them to gain employment. If we're able to create this new industry around growing healthy food inside communities, it's to me one of the greatest crime fighting tools there is. Putting folks to work. We need to put more than just, I heard a statistic, I think it was in Milwaukee, or we put 900 kids to work this summer in this one program, when in fact there was probably 3,900 kids that needed those jobs.
Right, right.
They needed those, I think minimum wage is $7.50 or whatever it is today. Those kids, those 3,900 kids would have been off the street doing something healthy, earning money, and doing some positive stuff and learning and being hooked up with some positive people that are teaching them some things, that some life skills that they can use, and educating them so that they can go back to school and want to stay in school and know that when school is over, they have a job, or they can have a job after school, as we are creating some programs in Milwaukee, so the kids will be able to, when they get out of school at 3 o'clock, they work 3 or 4 hours in the evening on the farm, and they're able to, get their homework done and get home and get to bed.
Now, in Milwaukee, before we close out the hour, I mean, you are doing everything from aquaponics and raising fish and other plants to kind of having these hoop houses, which are like greenhouses that stay on all year long, and growing vegetables that actually are being sold and feeding people in the city. This is not just for a fancy restaurant you're doing.
No, it's we have a very diversified marketing scheme. We sell to everybody. This year we'll be selling to the Milwaukee Public School System. We did a pilot project this year. And this coming fall, they'll be purchasing product from our farm. We sell to corporate companies. We, of course, have retail stores. We have a retail store at our main farm on Silver Spring Drive. We're opening up a new store on historic King Drive and some new development in an area that's a food desert area. We get our food to farmers markets, any place where food is sold, we're delivering food to. We're anchored in all the co-ops with our own sections, growing power sections, so people can come there and they can buy our product. They go right to the growing power section. They know they're getting local food produced right in the same city. Imagine our school board receiving food, our schools receiving food that's grown in the same city, not 200 miles away, and call it farm to school, but right in the same city. So that same thing can happen in Baltimore, and I know Tony wants that to happen and support the farmers throughout the state of Maryland. And a lot of people don't realize it, but Maryland's a great agricultural state.
Yes.
And those farmers need support, and there's a lot of money being spent by school districts to purchase food, and why not purchase it from local producers rather than getting it from, you know, California or out of the country?
Your subversive comments are really important here. I have to ask you one question. There's kind of a personal note. The pictures I see on your website, Growing Power, for your organization.
Yes.
Now, what I see on these websites is that's really phenomenal. You can learn a lot about this by just going to growingpower.org. But I see pictures of you in the summertime with this cutoff shirt. And then I see pictures of you when the snow is coming down. All of you are all bundled up, and you're still in the cutoff shirt.
Yeah, I've learned to adapt to this cold weather, you know. So the cold doesn't really bother me that much. When it gets down to about 10 degrees, then I'll put on a jacket.
You know, it just cracked me up seeing you out there, bundled up, and your snow's coming down, and you're still there.
Yeah.
Which is the way you look comfortable. And so I know you're a man whose finger, or you're more comfortable with your fingers in the soil growing than you are sitting behind a desk in a suit.
Yeah, I spend very little time in my office, even though I'm a CEO or whatever they want to call me. I basically need to be pressing the flesh of the kids and the folks in the community and the communities around the country and around the world that we work in, because that's where it's at. We need to start doing stuff instead of just sitting around talking about it. So.
Well, Alan, this has been just great. Thank you so much for joining us for this hour, and I look forward to hopefully one day to meet you in person.
Well, thank you very much, Mark, for inviting me on. It's great to talk to folks back home.
It is. Good to have you. Good to have had you back home just recently. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Will Allen, go to growingpower.org. And we'll continue our looks at urban agriculture and the future of our nation in the months to come. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Urbanite, Baltimore's free magazine of ideas and innovation. August is Urbanite's annual stories issue, featuring fiction, poetry, memoir, and plays from the region's emerging writers. Plus, a sneak preview of upcoming art season, a look at changes in troubled Sandtown, and tall tales from readers. Urbanite is available at over 700 locations. Visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of their drop locations. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're engineered today by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Devin Finley, and Brad Kolodner, who leaves us today to go back to college. His last day working with us, I believe. Good to have you with us this summer, Brad. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.